Hey, Potter World, it's yours truly. We're back again with Staffcast. As always, I'm joined by our Mexican League correspondent, Tom Hackamer.
Live from Durango. A first for me personally. Honored to be here.
Is everything sepia toned down there?
Honestly, a little bit, yeah. The movies were telling the truth.
Sweet. We also have Trevor Hildenberger here once again.
Hey, everybody. I'm back 2 weeks in a row.
We're setting new records every week.
What weird thing will happen to Hildy today?
Yeah, what's the background story on me today?
There's no parking lot attendant, so we're safe with him this whole time. Today, we also have a special guest. We have a friend of the podcast, veteran of five big league seasons, Michael Hermosillo. Welcome to Staffcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
That'll change pretty soon. I guess when I first reached out to you to see if you wanted to come on, I guess the one topic that sort of ties you and Hack together and is org limits that have been placed on the minor league systems to this point. And I guess for people who are listening who don't completely know what the limits are and how they're affecting these players, what have teams done to sort of cut down the minor league rosters and make it harder for anyone to get a job?
Yeah, I feel like, it kind of all, I would say, stems from kind of the whole situation where we were dealing with the contracts, especially for, first year minor league players or first contract minor league players. And I think the kind of give and take on that was limiting the rosters to 165 total, I believe. I don't know the exact number, but I know there is.
It is 165, yes.
Yeah,
165,
okay.
165 in season this year. Last year it was 190, I think, and previously okay. There had been no limit.
Okay. Yeah, so I think, there's always going to be a give and take, unfortunately. And I think that was kind of the solution where it was like, okay, we're going to limit the amount of players you can have in the organization, and then we'll agree to, raising the floor of what you guys are making in the minor leagues. And, I think that just kind of reached a point now where you're at that 165 limit, and it's kind of made AAA a blend of AA and AAA, I would say. So you're seeing a lot more prospects called up faster to that level. I also think it kind of saves the organization's money, not having to pay guys who usually make, sometimes in the six figures, being guys up and down in AAA in the big leagues. So, yeah, I just think there's a lot of things that came together at once. And I can't say that I was necessarily blindsided by it. But at the same time, I think, early on in your career, when you have this idea of what AAA is, and then you kind of, maybe compare what your stats are to guys in the past or just certain careers, you don't really expect at 29 to be offerless, I guess you would say. So yeah, it was definitely a little bit of a shock, but at the same time, with the news that was coming out, it was kind of one of those things where I feel like you'd be kind of blind to not see it coming, at least in some regard, just because that's kind of what we've always seen in baseball, is cutting someone out of the mix. Obviously super frustrating from that standpoint, just because I feel like I have a lot of baseball left. I know there's a lot of guys out there who do have a lot of baseball left who either don't have a job or having to go, the Mexican League route or indie ball route, whatever that route might be, to keep going. And, I think it is definitely a little frustrating when you know that there kind of used to be a level for that specifically.
Yeah, I think you said we knew, like, it's not hard to see the progression of events to how we ended up here.
For sure.
But I think the severity of it is what's surprising to me personally. Like the magnitude, the amount of guys who would normally be like pretty clear, like, okay, we invite this guy to spring training, like we see how he pans out, like maybe throw him in AAA for a bit, see, he hangs around as depth if we need him. Like
for
those,
sure.
That manner of player, that like, that sort of like upper minors experience, like quadruple A type of guy, like those guys would always have a job. Like they would always like bounce around in spring training. And like those guys are now like, I'm seeing those types of guys filling up the Mexican League rosters down here. And I'm seeing these guys and like, you don't have a job. Like this guy was good. Like what the hell's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely crazy to see. But yeah, I don't know necessarily what the solution is. It's kind of one of those things where it's kind of set in stone and what we agreed to, you know what I mean? So it's hard to know if teams are ever going to see like a renewed value in that, or if they're going to just try to get by with, you know, maximizing the most out of their young talent. But I agree. I see a lot of guys that are going to Mexico that, you know, it does shock me. It really does. Guys who are, you know, maybe a year removed from being in the big leagues and making a 26-man roster. So it's definitely hard to understand how it happened so fast. But at the same time, like you said, like there's been like a drastic move. Like it really did happen overnight where it was like a lot of guys didn't have offers and were having to find that route. So yeah, it happened fast.
Yeah, there's a lot of like the main concession given in the minor league CBA was the dropping of the size of the domestic reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It used to be there was no limit. Most teams would carry like a 190 to 200, and the Dodgers for some reason would have like 225 guys.
They
would have a bunch of extra project guys and extended or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the first year under the new minor league CBA, it dropped to 190. And then this year it dropped to 175 in the offseason, 165 in season for the five domestic teams that you have playing, which is just like, it is really drastic. Right. I think that that's why we're seeing this go the way it is, like where that had to be cut. You have your, you know, guys on their initial contracts, which are right to an org, your best value compared to, you know, signing you, Michael, for example, have to pay you a lot more than if they just take, you know, a guy they've had in their system for 3 years and be like, all right, well, you're going to be our utility guy in AAA.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's frustrating, I think, because like, I think the game suffers. I think the quality of baseball suffers. I mean, there are a lot of good baseball players between the ages of 29 and 32 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like the guys that have had maybe played out their first minor league contract and are minor league free agents and don't have any big league time. Or like you said, guys who have bounced around the league who have been DFA'd a couple times, but still are really good players. And as we know, can play crucial roles, can have breakout seasons at 30 in the big leagues.
For sure.
If two third basemen get hurt and then they get called up and they're hot at the time. That's good opportunities. Michael, you said your first year in AAA was 2017?
Yes, I got called up in the beginning of August, sometime in August, and I got to Salt Lake. That was a great day. I no offense to Mobile, Alabama. I actually didn't mind the city. The city was fine, but our stadium, very little support. We were kind of in a random spot. And I mean, obviously you guys know, I just don't want to offend anyone, but yeah, it's just so funny. You say, when did you, God, that was a great day. That was just like, oh my gosh, really closer to home. Like, this is great.
Mobile Stadium is rough.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Every time I saw Salt Lake on the calendar when I was in the PCL, I was like, ah, oh, fuck, we got to go to Salt Lake. It's the worst place ever.
No, 100%.
This guy hates Mormons.
It's just the air quality and it's high altitude and the blocks. The blocks are giant, bro. The blocks are like four city blocks anywhere else.
We're never
look up
getting
something on Google Maps and it's like, oh, it's two so blocks true. Away. It's like a 13-minute walk. Like, it's not two blocks.
So we're never getting the Church of Latter-day Saints sponsorship.
No, never. No, definitely never. But hey, I endorse Salt Lake, so count me out. No, I'm just kidding. It is a far walk from even the team hotel to the stadium. Like, you think you're close, and then you put that in maps, and you start to make your way, even on, like, a scooter or something. You're like, oh, my God.
It's a far. But you guys are right, though. Like the roster makeup from pre minor league CBA to now is totally different. I remember playing in like, I don't know, 2018 or 2019 in the PCL in Rochester, The Syracuse Mets had like 60 years service on their,
yeah, dude.
It was like Irvin Santana and Matt Kemp and Danny Espinosa and Rajai Davis and Rene
Carlos
Rivera.
Gomez.
Like eight, like, yeah, Gregor Blanco. Like, they had like a big league team that was just like chilling in Syracuse. And they all promised him, like, you'll be in the big leagues in a month. Just like swallow the pills right now. So it's so, that's, you know, no team is doing that now. No team is stuffing a guy with 10 years service time in AAA.
Well, and I think that was the good point was like, and this is even conversations, you know, with representation in terms of what teams were saying. And it was like, you aren't even seeing those invites to spring. Like, if I can't make a team, that's fine. Like, if you throw me out there in a big league camp and for some, like, things don't go right, you're like, dang, we ain't got a spot for you. Like, you didn't do anything to impress us. That's fine. Like, release me. But at least I know I had that opportunity. You know what I mean? It's like, guys aren't even getting that opportunity to even go to camp now. Or, you know, sometimes they use injuries against you. And it's like, I'm at the point in my career where I just want the opportunity. If an injury were to happen and we have to put in the contract, like, obviously I'm covered with, you know, rehab and stuff like that. But if you guys want to release me, like if I get hurt, like, if that's the route we have to go, I don't know. But it's like, there should be ways where you're at least given the opportunity in this, in where the spring training setting, where we don't maybe limit the rosters as much, like, you can invite 20 to 30 guys more, you know, to a camp at least, and you just have to make a final decision. I don't know, but it is crazy the difference that you see, you know, the roster makeup, because like you're saying, the 2017 team was wild. I can't even necessarily remember that team, but just remember the teams we were facing. And it was like, there wasn't a name in a bullpen that I didn't know. You know what I mean? Because it was a guy that I've already seen throw on TV or, you know, whatever. Like, you just knew the name. And it's same thing in 18. I remember in 18, it was like Jabari Blash, Eric Young Jr., Ben Revere, me, and Raimir Liriano. And it was like five guys that at any point could have got that call and filled out the Angels roster as a reserve outfielder. You know what I mean? Where, no offense, but I do think now you have maybe two guys in the infield and maybe outfield max that a team is like, yes, we would call them up right now and trust them 100%, you know, just whether that's in the outfield, just to have a good at bat, just a productive at bat, whatever. Whereas like, there might be one or two that are not ready yet. They're just kind of forced to be there because of the limits that are set.
Yeah, I think as a fan less than a player, one thing I've noticed is that usually early in spring training, even if it's the first game and there are tons of guys there, if they're playing even their C lineup, you know who the guys are that are coming up. You're like, oh, that guy played a few years ago. This guy was with Seattle whenever. I think the Mets spring training, I think basically by the first week, half of it was, oh, we're in like the AA deep cuts already. Mm-hmm. And I think my congressman, Tom Swazi's son, Joe Swazi, played like 15 games in spring training. And he was like a backup AA outfielder who had to play first base because they had no one else to do it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those things where, like, you know, it's no one's fault. You know what I mean? It's people getting put in positions before they have to be. Sometimes it's people that, you know, might get pushed and be ready. Like, it might all just click. But it's kind of one of those things where I think this is going to have an effect, you know, down the road, where it's like, you're going to be pretty much expected to have that, you know, like, linear path of success in baseball, or you're kind of going to get put aside. And I think, like we already talked about earlier, baseball is one of those sports where, I mean, it might click at 29, it might click at 30. Yeah. I've had so many experiences with different organizations and the coaching staffs and the ideas and stuff where I genuinely felt it was all starting to blend together. You know what I mean? Like, you take one idea from someplace and another. Like, the Yankees did a great job of getting me to finally hit, you know, stuff moving away from me. So cutters, sliders, things like that, I don't even get to show that. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's crazy in terms of how quick it did happen and they switched it, but I don't know what we do. I really don't. It's really crazy how fast they kind of redetermined what the whole minor league system is gonna be.
You know, I think something important to remember is like how much you learn from your teammates, your older, more experienced teammates. Like you don't, not everything is learned from coaches. And whether it's learned from failure or somebody who's older than me, I remember in being in AAA, I listened to everything the older guy said. Anybody who had either time in AAA or any time in the big leagues was like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. He had to. Otherwise, he wouldn't have showtime. And so, listening to what they talk about in the bullpen, listening to, or watching how they prepared, whether that be before the game or like literally in the bullpen before they went in, it's just valuable things that you can't quantify and you can't plan for. Like with a bullpen coach can't teach you everything, or a pitching coach can't teach you everything. It's just around being around guys who have been around the game for a long time, and I think that that's being undervalued.
Facts. I've learned so much from my veteran teammates, and I think back to that group specifically in 18, where I was like, man, I just had so many guys to go to. You know what I mean? Like, I was one of the, I was 23, 20, yeah, 23, and I was one of the youngest guys. And I mean, we were getting to that point when the Angels were, we were starting to push guys, and it was kind of, we were honestly probably one of the first organizations who started to really get aggressive with that. But at the same time, like, they were still filling out with veteran guys too. You know what I mean? It was a mix. It wasn't what it is now, that's for sure. I do think you're missing out on that learning aspect though, because I do think there's just a lot of less veteran guys around. And I mean, I hate to say the word veteran because I'm like, I'm 29, and they age you so fast in baseball, obviously, but just like played games, like seen a lot of games, crazy stuff
Reps.
happens in low A and high A, and like you just see a lot of crazy stuff. And so I
Which means
know
they
there's a
like,
lot of
everyone has that trajectory of like, especially if you're playing in AAA, you've had success at the lower levels. Maybe you breeze through the lower levels and then you hit adversity. And then you found a way past that adversity. Then you hit adversity again and you found a different way around that. And I think the guys who have survived and play until their late 20s and their early 30s, understand maybe slumps or injuries, the mental aspect of rehab, or bouncing around different teams and new cities and you're away from your family and all that stuff, or just like being bad on the field and finding a way around that. Guys at 25, 26, maybe I haven't experienced that yet, and to learn from a guy who has is you can't put a price on it.
No, agreed. If I was asking fellow like 23-year-olds at 23, like, hey, how are you going through the, how do you go through these slumps? Like, how do you, how you go? I don't know. I'm trying to do it just like you
Right.
are. It's the oh God, it's the meme with the guy in the noose first time.
Yeah,
Yeah, first time.
I love that one. Oh, that's a great one.
I know one thing that's, I think, in a grim way, the funniest thing about this is that nobody likes it at all. Like, Sean is our representative team guy, and he was even saying during the off season he'd see so many pitchers or so many hitters with great numbers that he wants. He'd be like, these guys have genuine potential to help our team. They could make us better. And you bring it to the team and you're like, we should sign these guys. It's like, buddy, you want to sign these five? Who are the five we're getting rid of?
Yeah, it's
That's
very
real.
morbid now to have to think of it that way. Like there was always like a general feeling, usually around the draft, so usually like mid July in, when we were all playing before they switched it. You knew there were going to be 30-ish guys coming in. That means roughly 30 have to go. But now it means literally 30 have to go. For what, everyone that comes in, someone has to go out.
It
They
is
still got a phantom?
wild.
They still doing the phantom list?
The development list, but right, that doesn't mean anything now. The
I
number
just
is
touched
high.
it.
I asked Sean about this for clarification. It's 165 guys, for the entirety of the minors.
Unless you're on the 60, right?
You have to be out for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
The season IL. Yeah. Yeah. That's the only way
so that opens up. If you have like a big oblique tear in spring training, but you could come back in July, they're like, that's still 165.
You're still good.
I think, yeah.
See, that like, is messed up. That right, is like, because that's where you really, yeah, you're going to really be pushing the limits. Because
it just doesn't seem like a particularly sustainable number. Like, it seems too low for what the requirements are of that group of players.
You know, to be honest, as I sit here, I really think, like, who agreed to this? Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know how we couldn't have seen that this is going to eliminate, because this is, I think, the more bigger thing that we get at is, like, at the end of the day, it really eliminates higher paying jobs in that, like, medium threshold, I guess you would say, where it's like, they really, yeah, sure, they have to compensate these kids now, pay for their living, whatever, but they've also eliminated how many, you know, jobs that were like an actual salary, livable wage, like, you know, could have a family with it, things like that. So, I mean, that's the bigger thing in terms of seeing the limit on the roster. Like, they were probably always going to find a way to, you know, limit the guys who are making more as opposed to less. Because we've always seen that as the example. Like, that's never not been the example.
Yeah. But, like, in the grand scheme of things, I can't understand how this is saving an organization an amount of money that's noticeable to anybody.
No, that's I agree with that. I definitely agree with that.
That's not.
I understand that it's, you know, trying to maintain a relatively equivalent cost to before, but like, if it's, you know, $5 or $7 million, like, do you think Steve Cohen even knows that's missing?
No.
Do you think Ipe Mizuhura couldn't have stolen that from him and he wouldn't notice?
Yeah.
Like,
no, and I think that's the other aspect, is I do think you would have, obviously, like you said, where there's like the Dodgers would have 220 guys. There are teams that would gladly have a full roster of guys that are in that level of like, okay, we don't have a spot for you in the big leagues, but we definitely need you as insurance in case something happens. But I do think there are other teams that are like, cool, 165, that's cool with us. Like,
right.
No,
which is
no
right.
More, no less.
It's still the same teams it was. It's still the exactly. Dodgers that do that.
Exactly. So it's like, now with that limit, it's you've tied everyone's hands. You know, you've kind of made everyone follow the same rules in terms of that aspect. So those teams that probably would invest more in those areas aren't even allowed to. Or they still have to make the same decisions. Like, do they want to keep an 18-year-old prospect or sign a, you know, 29-year-old that might help us? And, you know, at some point, I don't know. It's a hard thing for the organizations to have to decide to assert sometimes.
Right. It's a very crab bucket theory type of deal. It hurts everyone, but it hurts the teams that were willing to spend money more the most.
For sure.
Even in the margins.
Yes.
Yeah, and even you look at a team like the Dodgers as they exist, like, would they sign a Max Muncy now and give him a chance before he ends up hitting like 190 home runs for them? Or are they giving someone like Chris Taylor a shot, who now they like enough to give a $80 million contract? Like, these are actual productive players, all-stars, and MVP vote-getters who, when this was decided, they basically said, yeah, the league could live without these. It's fine.
You know, it's crazy to think about how many players that I played with or against that I knew were big leaguers, big league talent, big league work ethic, and never got their opportunity, whether they'd be stuck behind somebody or in the wrong organization, or quit the minor leagues because it was, you know, wasn't paying enough, or injuries. Like, there's just so many players out there that could really be stars and never get the opportunity. Everybody who plays in the big leagues obviously deserves it, but there's a lot more too. I think I was like 26 when I was like for real. Like, you know, you joke about people like, I would have gone pro if it wasn't for my bum knee, but sometimes that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And now it's just even less. That's what's great, because I think that was the other thing. Is like,
yeah, the opportunities are even smaller.
Yeah, when there wasn't that limit, you would have those guys that finally got out of their first contract or whatever, and were 27, 28, and now those guys might not even get another team to sign them like that, and that's wild.
You know, it's to Rich's point, like Chris Taylor was like sort of an up and down quad A guy with the Mariners, and then came over to the Dodgers. They tweaked something and made him a superstar. Like, there's plenty of cases of that.
For sure, especially in baseball.
Yeah, guy that Trevor and I played with for a bit, Sam Clay. Sam played out his whole minor league contract with the Twins, just kind of never had an opportunity. And, you know, as soon as he was done, the Nats signed him to a big league deal.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you just need, right, just a change of scenery, another team likes you but couldn't acquire you, that kind of thing. And, right, this is just another limiting of those opportunities for guys like that. It's pushing the game a lot younger, which is not a bad thing. It's a bad thing for me and you personally, but, like, it's not necessarily bad for baseball. It's frustrating, right? Like you were talking about before, like not having opportunities where you previously would have expected, you know, some at least. It also puts you into a position where you, someone said this to me walking out to the field. It was Donnie Hart. Speaking of older guys that you play with who you've learned a lot from, I've been around Donnie for a month. Steinauer, who pitched for the Mets. Orioles, Mets, Brewers. And like learned a ton from him already. He said something about someone who had just retired. He said, "You're real lucky in this game if you get to go out on your own terms."
Yeah.
And this is just another example of how more of those opportunities are being taken away from you. Like, there's just more chance that you don't get to go out on your own terms.
Yeah. Super humbling. Obviously, you know, still hopeful, whatever, but definitely humbling. How quickly it can just be like silence, like just you know, we'll let you know, like just it just is very, very humbling. Because and obviously like we talked about, all the stuff we're talking about doesn't help, but no matter what, you know, you always reach that point. And like you're saying, it is very rare that, you know, you're getting your wave goodbye, tip of the caps, and just happy feelings leaving the game as a player. That's for sure. I respect so many people like so much more now in terms of just how they view baseball, because I you know, I can't lie. There's been definite days where it's like, you can't help but be just a little bitter towards just the whole process. But, you know, like you're saying, I don't think the game should get older. Like I think, you know, it's a good thing to push these guys. I just don't think you had to eliminate the veteran aspect from that to also do that, because I think obviously, even, you know, before the roster limits and stuff, you still saw guys get to AAA fast. It was more by choice instead of by the limits.
Right. Yeah, it was a lot. I think COVID started to shift it a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure. But then even those first 2 years after, there still weren't, there weren't the roster limits, but it was still happening.
Yeah.
And I think it was good, right? It's one of those things that, much like the minor league CBA, I'm obviously incredibly happy for it. It's a good thing that should have existed for a long time.
Yeah.
Am I a little bitter that it happened after my time playing in affiliated minor league ball was over? Yeah, hell of course.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Oh, man. Could you just imagine? Like, I think of California. I mean, high A. We were living in like a two-bedroom, four different people, and it was like kind of stressful. Like, going home at night, it was like, gosh, I'm sleeping on this dang air mattress again. And it's like, now, I mean, you got your own room sometimes. You got furnished everything. Like, that is a big aspect that people do not think about. That was just the normal deal with it before, you know, that all came about. So, yeah, all of that stuff is super good. But like you said, you still are like, dang, that'd be nice to have. That's
Exactly. Yeah.
whole check's going to a half a room.
Yeah, not having to just do the old, you don't like it, play better.
Exactly. Yeah. I am.
I'm trying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is definitely different.
Have you gotten any sort of offers at all? Like, I know you put out a, it was actually the post that inspired me to ask you to come on, but like a,
sure.
a little letter. But have you gotten any feedback or any, just anything at all from teams? And
I mean, honestly, before I had posted that, I had kind of reached out to anyone in, you know, somewhat or powerful position. I mean, I literally just went through my contact list of people that I had, you know, talked to in the past and just kind of reached out and let them know the situation and stuff. And obviously, like, you get some positive feedback. You get, you know, we're just full, right? I mean, a lot of them was really just, we're full right now. Like, we're at our 165 limit. We don't have any room. If things change, you know, we'll let you know. But yeah, no offers for me on affiliated ball as of yet. So yeah, just kind of been staying ready, waiting. I'm kind of at the aspect where so I guess we could go into a little bit. I had kind of a weird experience in winter ball in Mexico. So I don't know that I would necessarily go back there. I don't know if I would do indie ball either. I just think a lot of those teams are, I'm in Arizona. So those teams are really far away. And I don't know. I just haven't really seen good examples of a lot of hitters getting out of there. So I don't know where I'm at, to be honest. I'm just staying in shape, you know, hitting, doing all that stuff. But I've also started to look at, you know, just what could be next. And I don't know, just staying hopeful in the meantime.
Yeah, that's the tough reality. Like, you know, you go through those swings, like you oscillate back and forth between it's over, like I should just go, you know, be a mailman.
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, and then we're so back. Like, you have a good day, like you're hitting the ball well, like mine would be like, I would throw a good bullpen and then, you know, I'd send the data out and everyone would just be like, ah, man, that's really cool. Unfortunately, like, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah. Oh, yeah, maybe I should go be a bartender or something. Yeah. And then, you know, I would throw.
No, I totally feel that.
It just totally keeps going back and forth.
I it's just funny you say that because I really had an example of that. It was last Friday. We were working out at the park and we were running the hills and there's a guy, Austin Johnson. He's a defensive lineman. I think he's with the Bills now. He was with the Chargers and he works out at the same place. So we just all met up to do the running at the same time at this park. And we were running these hills and he was like, man, you just make that look way too easy. Like, you're just gliding. And I'm just like you appreciate the compliment and you're just like, dang, like, NFL D lineman could at least see that, you know, the athleticism is still there. And that's like great to know. But at the same time, you're like, but that doesn't change, you know, what's going on right now. So I definitely agree where it's like, you know,
who want me?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's still in there and you know, you still have, you know, so much to offer, but it's like,
right,
who's going to give you the opportunity?
Yeah, it's even more frustrating when you feel that you are at least as good, if not better, as you've been in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I was getting ready to, I was literally like resigning myself to just like, all right, you know, like, what can I do? Like, what other things am I qualified to do? Which is nothing after playing baseball for the last 8 years as my only job.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, I said I would go throw live tomorrow. Went and did it. Throwing harder than I've ever thrown indoors, like preseason. Like, really good, really great command. And I'm just like, God damn it. Like, I've got to, I can't stop. It's like an obsession. It's a bad addiction. Again,
no, I totally understand that. I totally understand that. Like, that's why I can never judge anyone who goes until their arm falls off or they can't swing the bat anymore. Because like, once it's done, it's done. So I definitely understand that aspect. And that's like, that's the hardest part because you're like, am I going crazy, right? Like, am I crazy right now, like, to keep doing this or am I not? Because you just see so many examples. I mean, I saw, well, for me, I have a buddy, Justin Anderson. he just made it back up with the White Sox, and he didn't even have a job offer until like August or July of last year. So you see examples like that, or you see Tyler J.
Yeah, that's what I think he had.
Yeah, I was gonna say I was committed to go to U of I, so I always knew his name, just followed him and everything like that. And to be honest, I didn't even know, because that was his first time up.
That was his first time
debut. Wow. See, like, I didn't even know that. Like, I honestly had just assumed he got up at some point. You know what I mean? Like, you just, I don't know. You just kind of assume. So to hear
your draft class pack,
I don't
know. Year before.
Okay.
Yeah, but I played with Tyler I lived with Tyler in the fall league.
Okay,
in 2017, nice. And I was overjoyed when I saw. I was happy when I saw he was playing baseball again, because he seemed so depressed, like he was hurt and he couldn't get it taken care of.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what happened, but eventually, like, he texted me, he's like, "Hey, man, I got, you know," like, he texted me like 2 years ago that he was playing baseball again and actually enjoying it. I was just like, "Hell yeah, man."
Really That's happy for him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, couldn't be happier for Tyler J.
Yeah, so you see stories like that too, and you're like, "Gosh, like it's really hard to just walk away when you see, you know, guys doing it like that." It's awesome.
And like he stopped for a year or two. Like he stopped for a year while he had he had something in his neck that was causing thoracic outlet syndrome type symptoms.
And he finally couldn't swallow, bro.
Yeah, and he finally got that taken care of. Yeah.
Wow, that's not
awesome story.
I was not fortunate enough to like go out on my own terms when I retired, but I was fortunate enough to know that I was fucking cooked when I was done playing.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of jealous of that a little bit, because like I think that would give me a lot more peace. It'd be like
it was easier to swallow. Yeah, like I was pitching and I was like, you know what? I just don't have it like I used to.
Yeah.
I appreciate you guys. I just not the same guy. And that's cool. Like, that's hard to swallow in general. Like, damn, I used to be better than I am now. But I imagine it to be, 10 times more frustrating when you know that you're like, I'm nasty. I'm still nasty. Like, I'm throwing hard. I still got good stuff. Or I still see the ball well. Like, I still run well. What the fuck? You know?
Yeah. No, 100%. I think like I said, I had learned a lot of good stuff being in the Yankees org. They have a lot of good – I mean, they're really good about just developing guys, and they don't care what stage in your career you're at. They're just trying to get you better. They'll give you all the information that you want or need. And on the hitting and pitching side, they'll give you, you know, plans and just ways to attack it. So I was really getting a lot out of that and was – you know, probably hitting the most home runs like per at bat that I had ever had in my career. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of frustrating that aspect where it's like, dang, don't y'all see that? Like, there's still something in there. But at the same time, yeah, it doesn't really matter. You know, like I'm not saying like in the sense of overall, but it's hard for it to be relevant to anything unless someone gives you an offer. You feel like you don't have it, I guess.
Right. That's the most frustrating part of all of
it.
And I think that's why, like we were talking about, you know, playing in Mexico, playing in an indie league. I played independent ball last year and I'm in Mexico now. What I've seen and what I've heard from people I know team side is that like, well, one of the issues with the independent leagues, you were saying hitters getting signed out if there is difficult. And it absolutely is. Like, I've seen guys who are raking, like hitting 350 with, you know, hitting a bunch of homers, hitting the shit out
for
of
sure,
not going anywhere. Like, part of it is depending on the league. There's buyouts and secondary buyouts for your contract for the team, where the team looks at it and it's just like, well, it's, you know, we're going to have to pay the Long Island Ducks $90,000 overall if we want to take Alex Dickerson and put him in the big leagues. And it's so just like, wild. What? Like, what's the,
that is
like,
so wild. Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, we could just like keep this like 26-year-old, just like have him do it instead. That's a lot cheaper to us.
Yeah.
And that's why, that's one of the reasons that more and more of these guys, we were talking about a little bit before the show, are showing up in Mexico, because they're trying to, what I think they're trying to do as a result of this sort of stripping of the minor league system down to, you know, the bare bones, those older guys that you normally would have played with in AAA, now they're all kind of hanging out here. Like all of those like double A, upper minors time, like up and down big league kind of guys. They're hanging out here. The league, as a result, is getting better, and they're seeing better competition. They expanded the number of imports that are allowed, non-Mexican-born players allowed on each roster. And there is no buyout to go to back to an MLB team. So what it seems like is they're trying to, and from what I've heard from people I know with organizations, is that more and more of the more and more teams are assigning more full-time scouts to this league. So I think that's it's going to be more like when you need, an upper minors like innings eater or something, someone to just fill in a spot, instead of having to commit to them at the start of the year, you could just pull them out of here and see how they're doing.
Yeah,
is what it seems like.
Yeah, I see. And I think I'm trying to think how I say this. I think if it was like, if it was more official down there, you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I mean?
Like, I know what you're saying.
Because, not to get too much into my experience, but essentially what it came down to is I got released. But when I got released, my suitcase was still on the road. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I mean, clothes, Xbox, some nice shoes, things like that. I mean, we could guesstimate how much was in that bag, but it was lost. Yeah, and when that bag was lost, I was never reimbursed for said bag. So it's like, those are situations like you would never have stateside. You know what I mean? So I think, and I'm not saying it does not happen often. Like I've heard plenty of guys with really great experiences there, like literally no problems. And obviously it can be dependent on team, everything. But I think if it was, you know, a little more official in that sense, yeah, I think that would be good. Like, I think that would be acceptable. I think it's the aspect of like, you don't, it's kind of hit or miss if you want to take your fam down there, you know what I mean? So it's like that aspect where it's kind of tough to get everyone to commit to just going down there instead, I guess.
Right. And it's also for American players particularly, like, I know my Spanish isn't particularly good. That was one of the benefits of playing for the only team that plays in America in the Mexican League, Dos Laredos, is I'm still living in Texas.
Yeah, that's good.
Right, I'm traveling. It's much more convenient for me personally. Oh,
you're with Ian Kroll.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Okay, Kroller's like with them. I just seen him.
Yeah, I seen him. He posted on Twitter that he was throwing, like that he was pitching for his 15th year, and I saw it was with Laredo custom.
Yeah, he was here last year, I believe, back again this year.
Got you.
Right, so like that's, I think most of the guys that I play with, that's one of the things that was most appealing to them about playing here specifically in this league. I know like there's like a lot of cities in Mexico are quite large, quite nice and very safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's certainly some, right. There's some that you have a lot of Mexico has the perception of being unsafe.
Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say as a baseball player, you're totally fine down there. I mean, obviously knock on wood, whatever, you know what I mean? But like, I felt safe at all times. I think more just, you know, going to the field, and if I were to like take my fam down there, things like that, I think it's more like if you're going down there, it's like you're going down there to play baseball and kind of just, I don't know, dealing with yourself, you know, more than having to worry about any extracurriculars in that aspect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's the, obviously, like when I go to Scranton, I can take my family to Scranton and Triple A, you know, things like that.
Right. Do you?
It's like that.
It's just a matter of, do you want to? That's a different conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
Scranton's fine,
but I cannot believe that I had to pay $3,000 for an apartment there, like a 2-bedroom apartment there. I was like,
who are we fooling? Ridiculous. Why are we pandering to the Scranton Wilkes-Barre people?
Man, they was robbing me. They was robbing me. No gun.
you play with Matt Bowman then.
Yes,
I work out. Bowman, work out with Matty B.
Oh, awesome! Yeah,
great dude.
Awesome.
But there another tremendous example of a guy who made it back to the big leagues last year with the Yankees. He just got up with the Twins. He was out for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
with various injuries and COVID and various injuries. After being a good quality reliever for 3 years.
Yep.
He's still, I think the Yankees signed him in 2022 initially, but like another example of a guy that like could have been lost in the shuffle if he didn't get to like get back in that kind of situation and show that he was like healthy and still had
for it. Sure. Nah, 100%. That is so true. So true.
Yeah. I think we can all agree. Major League Baseball is doing a heck of a job. Everyone is very happy with everything that they've done.
No complaints anywhere.
It's all perfect. The uniforms, the roster structure.
Dude.
I think they're killing
it. World? All right. As a Nike supporter, I'm going to go ahead and blame Fanatics. I'm not going to blame Nike on that one, but my God.
We hate Michael Rubin here.
I mean, those are tough jerseys. That was the small lettering, the see-through pants. I just can't even believe it. I actually remember when we were getting fitted for those in spring training the year prior, and they were like, we're just doing sizes. We're not doing like custom
open
fittings anymore. Like
nothing's tailored. Just like good luck.
Small, medium, large, and extra large, and you'll have like a length depending on your height or whatever. And I was like, all right, well, we'll see how that works. And I mean, obviously, it's just a lack of quality to me. Like, I don't understand. This is where the jerseys are supposed to be the nicest. It's like you got college teams going out with better jerseys than the big leagues now.
The final stage of capitalism is fashion. Fascism, and we're fucking here, baby. The pants are not good enough.
Just get away with anything. Right, for real.
Right, like the most amazing part of it is like you could have just made the Major League jerseys better quality and continued to sell garbage to the fans.
Yeah. Right? People will continue to buy that garbage.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll still keep drinking that garbage.
I put this on CEO of Nike, John Donahoe's shoulders. Okay, he is the biggest dweeb in the world. You look up him sitting next to Drake at a fashion show. It is the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen. He used to be the CEO of the company that my wife worked at, which is why I know this fucking name. I don't go around walking around knowing CEOs' names. But I'm putting it on this guy.
Might be.
I think this is the first time since opening day we've really touched this subject, but Hildy and Michael, as guys who debuted and you saw your name in big letters on jerseys, and especially having longer last names, what would it be like getting to the major leagues when you did and seeing your name curved in like a rainbow shape with 8-point font?
I'd fucking kill myself.
I'd be so mad. I'm not going to lie. I remember seeing, I think it was Pete Crow Armstrong. I seen his name on the back and I was like, what in the world are they doing? Cause it really does. It's crazy how it looks worse with the bigger, like the longer names, because you would think it would actually make sense, but it doesn't. It's bad.
It does look really funny when you have a short name and there's still like this, you know, like
it's rainbow, like Wade or something. Yeah.
It's just you've got a four letter name that for some reason has a giant rainow curve to it. It's like, wow, this looks awful.
Josh Bell is one of the biggest dudes in baseball.
Oh,
and every time the Marlins play, you see him at first base. He's like 6'5", 200 something pounds. And you look at his last name, it's curved. I think it's probably about the size of the MLB logo on his neck. And it just says Bell. It's like, who the hell is that?
You got to squint to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. It's definitely not good. The only uniform adjustment, whatever, that I do agree with is not the quality of them, but if it were the old jerseys, is the way the Yankees did their aways. I think the like little extra like white bordering they had around all that, I think it's cool that they took that off. I think that jersey looks cleaner.
Yeah, it looks like the original way it was made now.
For sure. But I mean, obviously, seeing some of the pitchers when they pitch in the grays, I mean, they're like the top is dark gray by the third inning, and you know, like the quality of it that just doesn't hold the sweat anymore.
That's
so bad.
Carlos Rodon was wearing those black jerseys, it looked like, from the Players Weekend in 2019.
Was he pitching? He was like at the Astros or something.
He was in Houston.
It gets so humid in that thing. So I can only imagine. Yeah, that he had that jersey drenched.
Just wait till St. Louis in like July.
I never got to experience that, but I can only imagine. I played in enough places around there.
Minor league stuff. Like you would see that with dudes in the Florida State League in July.
For sure.
Because people, you know, you're pouring sweat and it's 100, you know, it's 95 degrees and 110% humidity.
Yeah, I will literally never understand them trying to cut corners on those uniforms. I think especially because I don't know, it's just something about those uniforms specifically. Like they used to be so nice, and it was like so rewarding whenever you finally got like the first big league pants or something.
Right.
And now they're just like
the
same pants
that look good.
Yeah.
Like
now they're just the pants that you just like pull off the rack at Dick's Sporting Goods or something.
I heard those guys, this was in minor league camp. I don't know before the season started, but they had old Majestic pants in the minor leagues. Yeah. And they had like, you know, big league pants or shit. Yeah. Usually you get like hand-me-downs from the big leagues. You're like, oh shit, let me get those. I'll take the piping out. And now you're like, ugh, big league pants. The fuck out of here with that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. I know. For real, honestly, I should go to, I'm sure in my like little storage unit, I could probably get some pants and be like, hey, I got some of these old Majestics. If anyone wants.
Hey, take this little Majestic symbol.
Pretty valuable.
One of the little things someone noticed is Bryce Harper was wearing his old pre-Fanatics jersey, the Phillies home creams. He was the only one wearing the old one. It was like a very clearly different color, and he had a normal size name on his back.
People didn't notice because of like the name originally, because he's at first base and you don't see the back of it as much. But when he came up, people are like, it doesn't look like someone like pissed on his jersey before he came out here. It's not yellow tinted anymore.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Right. Yeah, I'm shocked we're not seeing more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm sure there's some type of memo that was like, you will be fined or something. I'm sure there's some monetary thing that's keeping more people from
something
doing
that's
it.
Probably insignificant to Bryce Harper.
Yeah, for something 100%. That makes it so only for Harper would do it.
But I will say there's probably enough people that are like, I ain't even paying that to do it. So they just fall in line.
Yeah, if it's like $1,000, you know, like there's still like 90% of the league is like, I'm not going to pay $1,000 a game to wear my different jersey.
Right.
And Bryce Harper was like, I'll sneeze that money. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when they first instituted the stepping out rule in like 2015 or something. And they said, yeah, we're going to start fining batters if they step out. And David Ortiz is like, I've made hundreds of millions, all right?
Yeah.
You could find me every at-bat for the rest of my career. I'm stepping out.
Yeah, put it on my tab.
Exactly.
It's like the story that Bartolo Colon, instead of like teams that had conditioning tests, he would just show up to the strength coach's office with a blank check. Be like, hey, man, whatever the fine is, here you go.
Yeah, you ain't seeing me.
My favorite two stories about like people knowing they have money. One of them is Mike Hampton, and he was like, "You remember Mike Hampton, the guy from the Rockies who had like pitcher had like 8 home runs a year
with the school system." Yeah,
he would like he was on the bus and he was trying to put his bag up top, and I guess he was like on his tippy toes, and because he's like 5'8", and some guy was like, "Hey, buddy, like you need help with that, Mike?" And he's like, "Nah, I'll just stand on my fucking wallet." I think he just signed like a $120 million deal.
Got him.
Yeah,
it's good.
It's a good one.
I like the.
He was cool. He was actually a coach for the Angels.
Oh, was he? Nice.
Yeah, like he was. I think like rookie ball or I think AZL or something, because he just wanted to stay in AZ. So I got to know him a little bit. He's a cool dude, but I definitely could see him saying that for sure.
He still has the number one press conference response of all time when they asked, why do you sign this contract with the Rockies for like $120 million to be a pitcher? And instead of being like, well, you know, I really like the direction the team's going, he's like, yeah, Denver has a great school system. Thanks.
Sold him on the schools.
I know he was on, I think, that 2000 Mets team where Ricky Henderson also was. And they that I remember in the playoffs when they were deciding how to give out however much in shares for everybody. And yeah. Ricky Henderson was sitting in the back of the room, and everyone they named, from like the vendors to the concession stands people to the parking attendants, he kept saying, full share. And everyone's like, Ricky, stop. It's like, no, Ricky says they're getting full shares.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
I think those are the best people in baseball are the ones with enough money to know that, like, the general agreed upon rules. It's like, I really don't have to follow these. And everyone who watches them is like, God, I wish that was me. Yeah. I don't want to follow this rule.
I've heard of people being like guys with serious time, 10 or 12 years, being like, no share, nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've heard bat boys and like, you know, trainers and stuff. And it's just like, all right, fuck that guy.
Yeah. I've heard some stories. That can like mess up some relationships right there, man. I'll
for real.
That.
Yeah. Your pants are
you're
never
people's family.
Your pants are going to come wrinkled every single game for the rest of your life.
Well, they don't usually come back to those organizations. That's usually why they're doing it. But that's oof. I would not want to be in charge of making those types of decisions. That's for sure. Because I was never in one. I would just be like. Yeah, full share. Just don't come looking for me. Don't come looking for me. I wasn't the one.
If anyone asks, I voted full shares for all of them.
Yeah, I voted full share. You might not got one, but I voted for you to get a point.
I tried, man. Full share.
I tried. Oh, man.
It's like in Get Out, you're going around like, I would have voted for Obama a third time, except you're going around like, I voted full shares, but they wouldn't give it to you.
Oh, anyway. Full
my
share.
Tracks are covered. Blame the other guy.
Actually, one thing that I remember is, Michael, when you were in the majors, you actually made the catch that was one of the most memorable photos of the 2020 pandemic season that I ended up using as the header for my article.
Yes, that is, you know what, I actually, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to the same workout group. And I was telling them about that. I was like, yo, you think in 100 years from now in the textbooks, when they're talking about COVID, you know, just randomly in some random history book, I might be in there just like so they could show what it looked like in 2020? Because it is funny how that photo just, I think it might have been opening day against the A's.
I think it was,
So I think that's how that photo got used, just because it was like the first example of us playing with no fans. But yeah, no, super cool to have that photo and kind of just have that token of remembering what it was like when there was literally teddy bears in the stands and I'm making a catch, you know, along the wall to win the game, and two innings prior, I'm in the stands. Technically on the bench because we have the social distance, and so I'm sitting in like the third row like where a person would be usually sitting, and just trying to stay warm and ready in case I have to go pinch run or in the game or something.
That is going to be the textbook photo, because when I was writing the story, it was in the back of my mind. I could vividly see, like, is this guy making a catch in front of a bunch of fat, smiling teddy bears and also, like, a cutout of Lefty Grove?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. The timing of that one was a good one to be a part of, that's for sure. wearing the gaiters. I mean, man, that was a crazy time. That was also a crazy time. I just cannot. I still to this day just think about sitting in the stands, and I mean, because that was the first opening day that I had made the roster of, so that was like super cool. But then it was like in front of nobody, so it was super weird. And like, no disrespect to Oakland, but I mean that it just like that would have. I feel like that would have been the case maybe either way with how things are right now, but it was just really crazy to be like dead silence on
You
opening
think
day.
You're going to get, they're going to say your name and you're going to get some courtesy cheers. And at that point, they didn't even perfect the can cheers. You just got nothing.
Exactly. It was just nothing. It was crazy. That was
a
crazy
I feel
time.
For guys who made their debuts in that year.
Yeah, it was, dude, it was a crazy time for sure. Because I literally, I'll never forget too. I had the opportunity, I think it was like a pinch hit at bat against Framber Valdez, and I got like the game tying single in the bottom of the ninth or something, bottom of the eighth, something like that. And same thing, like super exciting moment, but just like dead silence in the stadium. And I just remember, you know, obviously like getting messages after the game, like, oh, congrats, whatever, but it was just so weird to like tie that into the moment that it actually was, because it just felt like practice almost. It was so weird.
The environmental equivalent of a backfield spring training.
yeah. But you know what I will say? And I think that's how I knew I was never like really, I don't know, nervous or like got butterflies in terms of like playing in front of people, was like you did see like still feel that same level of intensity because you did know it mattered. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it was kind of cool in that aspect to see like, oh man, like these like nerves and, you know, energy you're feeling, like, yeah, you get more of it from the fans, like definitely would always, you know, be pro fans being in the stadiums, but it was cool to like know, like, dang, you know, this feels like a practice right now, but you knew that it mattered, so you still felt how you would feel in that same, you know, situation.
I remember hearing guys talking about like, oh, it's harder to lock in, you know, it's harder to compete. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, like,
that
still matter. You're
not.
still trying to win. I don't care how many people are in the stands. You're still trying to get the batter out. I'm still working just as hard to get that batter out.
100%. And obviously your stats were still going to matter. And like those people were still watching at home cheering. Like they still were, you know, they were there in spirit. Like they were definitely watching. Like,
yeah, I'm competing.
Everyone saw it.
Mm-hmm. I talked to one of your Angels teammates, Elliot Soto, for that story. And
oh, heck yeah. That's
like
my
you
guy.
Were saying,
we lived together.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
He made his debut when he was on the field at Dodger Stadium. And it was like the third inning. And he looked over and I think he saw like Albert Pujols at first base. And he realized, he's like, oh, fuck. I'm in the majors. I got promoted.
Yeah.
I'm in a real game. I'm on television.
Yeah, no, that's facts. And I think that's a great point where it's like, if that was your first experience, that is wild, you know, like that is, man, I just can't even imagine that you just know fans, like none at all. Man, that is just wild.
His, Soto was on the taxi squad. And I think his takeaway, like you were saying, when you were in Oakland, like you were sitting in the stands and you couldn't be too close and you were on the bench. And I think one of my favorite quotes from that article was he was a guy who had completely just confronted the fact that was his major league time and embraced it. And I asked him, like, the first time he was in a big league stadium, that series, opening day against Oakland, I think he said he challenged himself to sit in a different section every inning. So he was like behind home plate and he ended up in Mount Davis. I said, what the hell was that like? He said, you know, being the only living person watching Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani play baseball was a pretty good time, all things considered.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. There's no doubt about it. I think that's the cool part. It's like, it was still so real. You know what I mean? Like it really was. I feel like those guys should feel just as proud as anyone else about getting up there. It just is so crazy that, you know, they didn't get that just round of applause, you know, maybe their first at bat or something. Just was like,
yeah, families couldn't
sound
be there.
Yeah, like families couldn't be there, things like that. Just just so wild. That was a crazy time for sure.
It's one of those things where the more time goes back, you look and you're like, damn, that was, we did that? Like that?
Yeah. Not damn. To be honest, like damn, 19 Mitch, we lived through like this? 21. Yeah, that 19 through 21 was, it all feels like a blur almost, to be honest. There's so many times where I think a certain year or something happened, but it was always like the year earlier or after, because that whole time period was just, that was a mess. That was a mess.
We already have another election. Sorry. You thought that was just yesterday? Nope. Been 40 years.
Yeah. And just like, I remember because we had Long Beach State as ours, alt site. So it was just like, I remember when I got optioned and we were just at the alt site every day, and it was a glorified like practice almost. I mean, we would literally do some random stuff for like an hour, and then we'd play a game against other teammates and coaches. Like coaches would fill out some of the outfield spots, and then it would just be play like a 9-inning game and stay ready in case you ever got called up. Try not to get struck out by Quijada, because he would have his whole family in left field just going crazy if he punched someone out. But that was literally it. That was the only fan experience I had. Jose Quijada would bring his whole family, and they would just hang out and laugh at any time he would pitch. They were just going nuts for him. And that was the only fans. So that was our fans for our practice games, and it was just, that was a crazy time. We had a lot of prospects for that. And I mean, I just felt like they were asking these kids to do so much, just like every single day, just to be out there and kind of like wearing the California rent and things like that. Just getting, and that was before all like the raises and the minor league pay and stuff. So yeah, that was just a crazy time.
Speaking of the Angels, I feel like every time that, like, I assume you, whenever you say, oh, yeah, I played on the Angels these years, people always say, how was it playing with Trout and Ohtani? And I hate being cliche, but especially you were there. You came up in 18, right? Ohtani's first year?
Yep. So I was actually one of the first, like, Angels people to meet Ohtani, which was super cool because he came right to Arizona to start working out in January, and me, Cole Calhoun, CJ Crone, Garrett Richards, we had already been working out there that off season, just kind of going in with the strength coaches and stuff. So when he got there, we obviously all met him and were working out, and I was a part of like the first BP group that he ever hit on. So yeah, I mean, obviously I've pretty much known him from the jump, which has been cool, to kind of see, you know, just be a little bit of a part of seeing, you know, his rise and stuff. I'll never forget. I remember texting Cody Bellinger and Patrick Murphy. We were just in a group text. This is back in like 18. And they texted me and I'm like, what you got on Ohtani? And I'm like, dude, this guy's going to be legit. And I just felt like from just the tool standpoint, like you just saw his BP immediately, like the power and things like that. You're just like, man, if this dude figures it out at all. I kid you not, I was so shocked at his initial spring, because he had that spring where everyone was freaking out, and I was like, damn, like really, like I don't see it, like I just see this dude crushing it, like I do not see this guy struggling at all. And obviously, you know, he's become who he has. And then obviously, like, then you have Mike Trout too, like you have one of the greatest baseball players of all time and this unicorn, and like on the same team. Yeah, no, I think what I was going to say is one of the coolest things I have is my debut lineup, just having like Mike Trout signed, like he's in the lineup, Ohtani signed in the lineup, Pujols signed in the lineup. I'm just like, that to me, that's like one of the coolest things that I have for sure. It's like just being able to have been on the same field as those like three guys, and then you know, tie in like your Justin Upton's, who I looked up to as a kid. Andrelton Simmons, who's like obviously the nastiest, or like, yeah, the nastiest shortstop we've ever seen. Like, just there were so many guys like on that roster. Cole Calhoun, obviously, just like an Angels legend. Like, it was a cool lineup to be a part of. Like, I know we didn't have success, but there was always like a bunch of dudes on those teams, just guys to learn from. And, you know, Trout and Ohtani being obviously the two main ones. Yeah, just crazy. I think that kind of ties into, too, like where on the whole gambling thing that, you know, has come up where, like, even immediately I was like, dude, Ohtani, there is no way he had anything to do with this. Because I think if you just see the amount of work that guy puts in every day and just what he has to do just to, you know, keep when he, especially when he was doing both and not recovering from injury, just all the pitching stuff he has to do, all the hitting stuff he has to do, he just gets after it, man. And he's always trying to get better. And I think, like, he legit obsesses over baseball 24/7 and just tries to find ways on how he can be better. So, yeah, no, they're those are two guys that were, it was really cool to just watch and just see what they do. Because I think Trout's in that aspect too, where it's very hard to like ask Trout things, not in the aspect that he's not open. He definitely will, but he just does so many things just naturally good. You know what I mean? He didn't really ever have to work on it necessarily as much as some other guys. Like he was just built really well to hit a baseball, and he did a lot of good things early on and stayed doing those things. But, I mean, you can still learn so much just from, you know, seeing how he goes about his business and kind of also just, you know, there's so many different ways of doing it. And I think that's what's cool, too, is, like, you can see one of the greatest baseball players of all time, and it might not be your idea of how you expected that person to be there. You know what I mean? Like, there's just – everyone has their own way of doing things, and – you know, some guys might be in the lab 24/7 and some guys can do it without. And yeah, it's just cool to see the level of talent that you get to, you know, be with every day and learn from and all that. It is cool.
Oh, well, it reminds me of when you were saying about Trout, when Ted Williams became a manager and like a hitting coach, he'd get guys in the cage, he'd tell them, all right, do this and this. And then they wouldn't hit like 406. Like, what the fuck, guys? I told you what to do. Why aren't you doing
it? It's very my personal example for that one is when I was in the fall league, Sandy Alcantara was on my team. And there was a guy, one of the guys from one of the other teams, I think the Rays, was in the bullpen, like trying to work something out mechanically on how to like rotate faster, and Sandy walked by and he was just like, What are you trying to do? He's just like, I'm just trying to move faster. He's like, you just move faster, man.
Yeah.
Like, it was just very easy to say when you throw 100.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what that was a running joke in 2018 with the Twins, because we had Paul Molitor was our manager. Obviously, like Hall of Famer, 3,000 hits or whatever. And we were like kind of a bad team for stretches. And I remember Jake Cave and Tyler Austin looking at each other and be like, do you think Molly just looks at us like, fucking bunch of slapdicks, can't play worth shit. I got one ball player on this club, and it's Joe Mauer in the corner. Everyone else sucks. What do you mean you can't hit a slider? You just hit it. You see it and you hit it. What's the problem?
I got 3,000 hits. You mean to tell me you can't get 100?
Come on.
That is so real. Yeah, that is so real. I feel like there's people like that that have to just be like, man, what do these people see? Because I could do this in my sleep.
Yeah.
It's also really interesting when you're around those guys that are just like these absolute specimens, and like you, it's either like watching how they do things, or if you ask them their thought process going into it and just being like, oh, okay, you can do this because you are the top 1% of the top 1% genetically in this thing.
Like, nothing I do
will ever make me able to do what you can do. Like my roommate currently is Michael. You probably played with him actually, Robert Stock.
Oh yeah, yep.
And I love Bob. I really do. He's fantastic. Listening to him talk about baseball is really interesting. It's wildly unapplicable to anybody else in any other pitcher. I played with him last year as well, and like guys would be like, because Stock throws a million miles an hour.
Yep.
People want to know how to throw a million miles an hour, so they ask Stock, and he says, "Well, this is what I do." And I'm like, that's great. Stock's thrown 95 since he was 15.
Exactly. Yeah.
He can just do this shit, man. Like,
yeah. No, that is definitely Stock. He's a great dude too. His Twitter. And like you said, he's the type where he's just gonna be like, well, this is how I do it, and
Right. And he will be very open and like, he's willing to share every bit of information he has on why he does what he does. But that doesn't mean that it will work for me or anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that's a great thing to like learn too. Like, because I think you can kind of go on with this aspect. Like, this is completely different in a certain sense, but it's like you can go into the aspect where it's like all these guys are just like superheroes almost. And it's like not necessarily the case. Like, yeah, there's some guys who are like putting in work 24/7, like checking all their analytics, doing all this. And then there's other guys who clock in and clock out and are still super good. And it just comes in all forms. You know what I mean? Like, some of your teammates you're going to be wowed by, like, where it's like, oh, that guy is so smart, impressive, like, whatever. And there's going to be others where you're like, geez, like, just like any other person, but is just ridiculously good at one thing, like hitting a baseball, throwing a baseball, whatever it is.
It's just some guy. It's just wild.
Yes, exactly. Like,
just some guy with the best hip-shoulder separation in America. That's all he is.
Yeah.
My favorites are the ones where it's like, this guy's lifestyle should not add up to like the best hitter I've ever seen. It's like, this man, like, I watched Luis Arraez eat an entire family-sized bag of barbecue Lays before a game and like a liter of Mountain Dew, and then go out and get 5 hits. It's just like, yeah, that's right. Like, nothing I can do about that.
To other
like
people, it would just be absurd.
Right.
Every story about Jacob deGrom, like, oh, his rigorous activity, it's like he looked at a weight once and vomited, and he orders 15 pizzas before a start. It's like, oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah, just touch, everyone is so different. I mean, some people, like, can't even lift. I know, like, some supposedly Stanton's thing is he legit cannot lift weights or he will get too big. Like, he has to just, like, strictly stay to me like too. Bands and like, you know what I mean, like, man, I wish I had that problem. Like, what in the world? Like, there's just some people just got it like that, some don't.
When I first played with Yoan Duran in 2019, he was physically incapable of doing a body weight push-up and he still threw 100, and that was the first time in my career that I was just like, oh man, like, it might not matter what I do. Like, there's just dudes who are like, it's just going to be so much more talented than I could ever be.
It gives you peace of mind, though. You sleep good that night.
Yeah.
It's just
like, it's nothing I could have done.
Yeah.
It's out of my hands.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. I was rehabbing with Joe Adell. And that kid, if you want to feel bad about your athleticism, I don't care who you are. That kid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you're not going to find anyone who jumps higher. You're not going to find anyone who runs faster. You know what I mean? Like, even at his size, probably as strong as, like, guys who are lifting O-linemen. You know, things like that where it's like, there's just some people who it's like, yeah, you're like, okay, I'm never going to be faster than that guy. I'm never going to jump higher. I just got to, like, got to try to square that ball up just right. Like,
I don't remember if he told it on the podcast, but or, like, after it one time, but Sean told the story of his first big league camp with the Athletics. They brought in Ricky Henderson to teach the guys how to run. And they lined them all up, Rajai Davis and Sean and everyone. And Ricky was doing this motion where he'd run to first base, and instead of rounding the base, he'd do something with his feet. So he sort of like pivoted and pushed off the base.
Yeah. Where it would take like
half a second.
That's their thing. And I forget what it's called, but yes, that is the thing with the A's. Eric Chavez, sorry to interrupt, but Eric Chavez was trying to teach us that in the Angels camp one year.
Yeah,
please, go ahead.
And they said it was like a half an hour, and guys were like sobbing and about to throw up because they've just been running full speed just over and over and over. And Ricky would be like, why aren't you doing what Ricky tells you? It's like, Ricky, I'm not Ricky.
Yeah, exactly. You can't do what you do.
All right, guys, I got to take off. It's almost 8 here, and I got to drive home to my 2 kids. So
yeah, I think we covered just about everything. Is there anything we left out, or I think we're all set?
I thought it was good. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, we remembered some guys. We had a good – I think this was good work.
If there are any major league weirdos listening to this, please sign Michael. Please sign Hack, or I'm going to have to take matters into my own hands.
Sign us. Don't worry about no one else, just us.
Just you two. Listen, if anyone benefits, it better be you two.
Yep.
But
thank you.
No, this was great, guys.
A lot.
Yeah. Anyway, this has been episode, I think, 13 of Staffcast, and on behalf of Hack, Hildy, and Michael, I'm Richard Staff, and I'm sorry you had to listen to this.